Hello and welcome to In Session with Daniel O'Reilly on RTE Radio 1. We're live here in Studio 8 with a lovely little studio audience. Thank you guys for coming to see us. We have some amazing talent and a great collection of musicians tonight, and I'm very honoured and delighted to be here to present the In Session show. First up is two very good friends of mine who I met in London just about 4 years ago in the very first week that I moved to London. I was really straight away impressed with their enthusiasm and their work ethic and, of course, their talent. And they're going to do a song now for us called Butterflies.
Just a touch in the shoulder, I'm passing out. Wish I could have told her I'm freaking out. For I have been poisoned by butterflies, and I have been stared blankly by those eyes, by those eyes. Ooh. But don't kill only makes us stronger. I guess I'm stronger now. But don't kill only makes us stronger. I guess I'm stronger now. But don't kill only makes us stronger. I guess I'm stronger now. But don't kill only makes us stronger. I guess I'm stronger now. Now. Roll with whatever flows that comes my way, I always say.
Hudson Taylor, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Now join me over here, lads. Join me over here.
Now we'll come over. We won't distract you.
That's it. This is where it all starts now. My very first interview, and I'm delighted that it is Hudson Taylor. Two great friends of mine, Harry and Alfie. Yous are very welcome. Thank you for being on the show.
We'll go easy on you, Danny.
Thanks very much. Cheers. Cheers. So yeah, I spoke when I was introducing you about when we first met in London, as I say, the very first week. And I wanted to ask you about the decision that you guys took to move to London at such a young age. Because we, in the Corona, sort of did it the other way, in that we sort of started off in Ireland and built up our fan base and then realised we had to take the move. But you guys took the brave decision of doing it when you were very young. And what was that like? And was it daunting when you first went over? Or, I don't know. What do you think?
So when I was 17 and Alfie was 16, we were just putting up videos on YouTube and doing a bit of busking in Dublin on our lovely Grafton Street. And we started getting a bit of traction whereby people were hearing about us online, and the first kind of contact that we got from anyone was from a record label. Actually, as it happens, Polydor, who we now signed to for like maybe 3 years after this, but they're from obviously a London record label. And within a space of a few weeks, we also got contacted by a manager and an Irish record label. So it was kind of weird. I don't know what happened, but in a space of a short period of time, after putting up one particular song,
It just all started to move for you.
And we didn't really know what a record label did, what a manager did, what any of this stuff was. So we thought the only way we could find out is by going at least and seeing. We didn't plan on moving right there and then, but at least going to see what it was all about.
And how did you find the first year? Like, whenever I met you, it was always really, you know, you always seemed to be in great form and you seemed to be enjoying the buzz of London. And, but did you find it tough being away? Like,
I mean, the first year, like when we first got there,
I saw the first apartment you were living in. Like, it wasn't exactly the luxury.
Yeah, that was like 6 months after we first went there, like for the very first time. And to be honest, when we first went there, just given the situation with our manager, or whatever, she worked in the studio where we met, the Dean Street studio, and that place is like just. If you've never seen a studio before, it'll blow your face off.
It's steeped in history. It was it was once owned by like David Bowie, and like many greats have recorded there.
So it was beautiful.
The first 6 months, we were hanging out in there, sleeping on the sofa, you know, feeling like absolute rock stars. And then 6 months later, we were faced with the reality of, the gap.
Having to find somewhere to actually I remember going in that first day to see you, and you play Chasing Rubies for me, the two of you, acoustically, and I was totally blown away, like, you know, and it's still such an amazing song.
Yeah, we were blown away, to be fair, because we were such big fans. So,
yeah, and we were, like, doing this trade-off where, like, I'd play one of the Corona songs, and then the boys would play something, and they won.
It was not fair, it was two against one.
Yeah, exactly. But then as you say, 6 months later, I remember going over to your house and up it was Arnos Grove, and you were into the local deli guy looking for a free sandwich, like,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah, well.
But like, so did it ever? Was it ever a struggle for you? I mean, obviously financially it might not have been easy, but I suppose, did you ever have any doubt, and were you ever thinking, you know what, maybe we could just go home and go back to doing the busking and making money and try and build it up there? Or was it an easy decision for you to come over?
If that ever did happen where we were having doubts, it is only London, so
exactly,
yeah, Ryanair flight out the next month and you're grand.
And I suppose with anything, we've always felt like if anything messes, you know, if it goes tits up for us, we'll just go busking somewhere
else.
Yeah,
exactly. You always have that fallback.
So.
Yeah. Busking is a great fallback.
Yeah.
That's cool. I want to ask you about performing as well, because that song that we played there,
we wrote it together.
Yeah,
with you.
Well, I can't take too much credit for it. You had it at like 80% done anyway when I came in. But the lyrics, I think, are great, and it's sort of about the nerves of performing live.
Yeah.
Did you find that got easier over time? Were you always nervous, or do you still get nervous, or does it depend?
Like we were just talking about busking there, that really helped me, and I think Harry as well. Once we had done it a few times, then it started going well for us. Then
because busking probably is actually the hardest thing to do, really, isn't it? Because there's a lot of people not listening to you, and
that,
you have to,
like, the first time you play for your family, or you know, something like that.
Do you guys find it easier to write just the two of you?
Essentially, we are co-writing as two people, so it's instantly it's a unique experience compared to a single, like a songwriter,
me on my own or Harry on his own. Yeah. But it's been very good. Like, we've always been open to writing with loads of people, just from anything. Usually it just happens from jamming. It might happen with jamming with us.
Because it can be a tough thing, though, co-writing with someone. You know, it is a personal thing.
Yeah.
And for us, we only started doing co-writes really with this, our latest album, For the Coronas, and I really enjoyed it, more so than I thought I would. Like, you know, and because it is, you're putting yourself on the page. At the end of the day, it's your song, so it's your lyrics that you might be singing, and if someone else is telling you, do you argue ever about lyrics, or?
Not really.
I mean, more like we've had like disagreements with like what song
or not. What's
the
song?
It's just taste. It's like, taste. I might prefer a song, and he might prefer another song, and we just kind of sort it out. We just kind of play it live, see if the crowd likes it, and then we're like, oh, whatever. Change our mind.
Well, we're going to do. Just before I let you go, I want to ask you about Brighton. You're living there now. How's that?
Have you enjoyed the
move?
It's great. It's like a mixture between Dublin, Galway, and London all mixed together. Like, very nice, full of bohemian people. And
it's a good, very good description.
Lots of seagulls. Loads of birds.
It's always good. Well, listen, thanks a million. We're going to try and do a song that we were originally working together in Dingle, weren't we? I'll let you guys introduce it.
Yeah, well, this is a phenomenal song, Danny. This is that same with Butterflies. Danny pretty much did all of this. This came from like
Small idea that we were working on down in Dingle on a cold January or late December eve. I think there was a hot tub involved.
There we go. The scene is set.
Yeah. Yeah, not a stove, fire, like, no, a jacuzzi. My next guest is someone who's obviously very close to me in a lot of ways, and I'm very happy that she agreed to do the show. Would you welcome, please, Roisin-O. So I know you're going to do a song for us now in a minute, but I wanted to have a chat with you first.
Okay.
Well, I know when I was 21, I went on tour with my mother and supported her solo, and it definitely gave me a lot of confidence on the stage. As you well know, it's a tough gig to do, to support Mary Black in front of a different audience, a different, you know, genre of music, and you're up there by yourself touring around all sorts of countries. How much did you enjoy that, and how invaluable did you think that was to you, or do you even think it was?
Yeah, I think it's definitely invaluable. Like, having to go on stage, especially playing instruments on my own, it was always something I was nervous of, and getting up to that size of an audience and sort of knowing that I have to be good because this audience expects great musicians, you know, and it definitely invaluable experience, and getting to be on the road from such a young age on that sort of tour, going to America and Australia was amazing, and it's definitely stood to me now, as you say, in my confidence on stage.
Well, I wanted to ask you about your nerves and stuff as well. It's something that we differ in a lot of ways. Do you find it still hard? Does it get easier or does it get harder? Because I talked to our Auntie Frances, and she says she gets more nervous now than when she started.
Yeah. I think it gets definitely easier. I think as well, you might think I'm nervous because whenever I see you, I'm doing support for yous. Okay. And that I find that is, or support for my mom, and that is nerve wracking because you're going out to an audience who aren't there to see you. And I think you have to work harder to win them over. Whereas if it's my own gig, while I'm still nervous, I can enjoy it more. And it is more of an excitement thing, and the adrenaline is pumping and you know they're there to see you and they want you to succeed.
Yeah.
Whether when you're going out on the support gigs, it's a little bit more pressure, I think. Yeah. Well, I still love it just as much. A great feeling to win them over.
Yeah, absolutely. And playing live, I suppose, with the band now that you have put together, you seem to be enjoying it as much as ever, I think.
More than ever, yeah. I think when you put yourself around musicians who are enthusiastic.
Go on, name drop them.
Like John Bro and John Rigney, and they just love the music and they want to be there. And
very talented.
It's
like, well,
like you and the lads, like when you're around your friends, you have 50 times much fun. Like, you know.
It's much easier, isn't it, when you're getting on well. Yeah. Thank you so much for doing the show. Do you want to introduce the song before you?
Yeah, I'm going to do a song, the one that we wrote together recently. I just thought it'd be appropriate. It's called Word Strong.
Okay, so we have Roisin Ó up next. You're listening to In Session with Danny O'Reilly here in Studio 8 on RTÉ Radio 1. And this is Roisin Ó with Word Strong. That was Roisin Ó, and I'm very, very excited to introduce my next guest. I'm a huge fan of his music and him as a person as well, of course, and I'm delighted to have him with Small Fire. It's Mr. Mick Flannery.
Big bomb flying, worried about the ocean rising, thinking on the day that he died, and wonder if he were ever alive when the same day he saw the big blue sky. The same day they were closing his eyes. I lit the small fire, more I don't know who lit the big one. I lit the small fire, I don't know who lit the big one.
Mick, I'm very, very happy that you agreed to do this gig. You're probably regretting it now that you're standing up here in front of all my family and friends, but thank you so much. And first of all, tell us about that song. I love the lyric in it, and it's sort of, I think I heard you tell the story before, and it's quite funny. So
there's a story from the main lyric, I suppose, of it. Like, but the song kind of has nothing to do with the story.
Really, yeah?
The small fire lyric came from my grandfather when he was 3 years old. He burnt down the hay shed. He went out playing with matches and he lit the whole thing up.
Yeah.
And his mother came home from town, couldn't find him. He was hiding underneath the bed. She took her quite a while to get him to come out, like he knew what was coming his way. And
That was his excuse.
Yeah,
he lit the small fire. I don't know who lit the big one.
I don't know who did the big one. Brilliant. So good. That's great. It's a great lyric. Oh, yeah, you know, I was there at your show in Galway last week, and by your own admission, you're a man of few words. Yet I'm sort of very impressed with how comfortable you are in front of an audience, and how sort of your wit and sort of dry humor it can really encapsulate an audience. I suppose, as I was talking to Roisin earlier on and Hudson Taylor, were you always comfortable playing live, or was it something that just came along?
It came along very slowly.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it was terrible.
Really, yeah.
And I've wondered what I was at.
Yeah.
I didn't understand the bonus of what was the plus side to it for a while. Like, there must have been some, you know, like you said, ego thing working in the background.
Yeah.
But I used to nearly get sick, you know.
Really, yeah.
Before.
Well.
And the talking was the worst part for me always. It was more.
But you don't struggle with it anymore, sure, because you seem.
I do have that sometimes. Sort of, if I say something stupid, if I try to tell a joke, and sometimes I can try to be too cool, you know, and it just comes across. It comes across badly.
Yeah,
it comes across.
That happens to me all the time. And I suppose, I wanted to ask you about when you started writing songs. Your first album is a concept album, wasn't it?
It was out of lack of subject matter, really. It was a school or a college project type thing where they set you goals to achieve. And I felt I didn't have anything to speak about with authority in my own life because I was young. And I just made up this story and then spoke with authority on that.
That's great. And then I suppose what changed then with Red to Blue?
I suppose a little bit of, in the background to writing the songs for the story, I was then putting down more personal songs, which then I had to keep aside. I don't know, maybe it was a question of growing confidence that I was able to sing songs about my own self without
what's going on,
divorcing myself from the thing.
And I want to ask you about signing to a major label. I know you went to Germany and you were with Universal, there's a lyric in Gone Forever that I think is sort of a jibe, but I suppose some suits maybe in the industry, correct me if I'm wrong, but do you find it difficult, sort of that thing of whether to be indie and or as you know, as it's seen as supposed to some people, selling out, or what's your take on that? Are you just happy to do whatever?
You're right about that song. I think I know that line you're talking about. We got your number, but we don't care, type thing. Yeah, any
to
song,
me, that's what screams out. You know, I can relate to that as maybe a label person who's promising the world, but you don't really want to know because, you know, it's nothing really to do with what you're about.
Yeah. Any song I ever wrote with the compromise in mind, do you know, when you go to the meetings with a record company, and they want a radio song, which is understandable because they want to sell CDs. You know, invariably, any song I came up with after that, with that in mind, was sticking my finger up to the conversation in the first place. They were the only ones that made any radio play was me giving out about record
companies. That's brilliant. that's really good. It's great irony in that. Yeah. Cool. Well, listen, I really, really, I'm so grateful for you coming in. And doing the show, it really means a lot to me.
Stop.
And will you give even now an intro there before you go back and sing it for us?
Oh, this is a lovely little summertime song about infidelity.
Beautiful. Thanks very much, Mick Flannery. Thanks so much to Mick Flannery. Delighted to have him here. This is In Session with Danny O'Reilly on RT Radio 1 here with a lovely studio audience here in Studio 8. Now up to our final guest. It's flown by. I'm very happy to introduce my three best friends, Graham, Connor and Dave from the Coronas. You go up there and leave Dave here for a second. So, lads, thanks very much for doing the show. Dave, how are you feeling?
No, it's the least we could do for you then.
Thanks a million. Cheers. How are you feeling?
Good, yeah, really good. It's an amazing collection of people you assembled.
Yeah, I'm not doing too bad. No, I'm really enjoying it.
How are you feeling?
Yeah.
You seem like a natural. This could be a thing.
You never know. It's the start of a glistening career, hopefully, yeah.
I think you should have this by now. You don't listen very well, but when no one's around, you're much more like yourself. So tell me again, or how much you make.